Welcome to the first podcast episode of With Students in Mind. My name is Matt Townsley. I am a sixth year math teacher from Solon, Iowa. I blog Metamusings, mctownsley.net. And my co-host is...
I am Russ Garand. I am a second year teacher. I teach sixth grade language arts and one section of social studies. I blog at tagmirror.org.
And Russ, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about the history of this podcast?
It's a pretty short history at this point. Something that Matt and I have been talking about for probably going on a year. Yes. Just an idea that came to us at some point that, you know, with all the conversations that we have, kind of figured it'd be a good idea to put them down digitally and...
share them with the world.
Share them with the world. That's kind of the idea.
So our vision then is... we're by no means experts. Between us, we've got a whopping 7 years of educational experience, and there's plenty of podcasts out there where the experts are shouting out their thoughts, and we are here to be a voice from the trenches, and definitely with students in mind, not with our own agendas or with some degrees or higher educational background. We're just here with students in mind to share what's on our mind and what works, and ways in which we can change the system so students can benefit. Russ, go ahead and tell us a little bit about the format of our podcast here with the 1, 2, 3.
Well, the way we kind of figured it out, what works for students in my classroom is structure. And so yes. We kind of wanted to give our listeners that same type of thing. So what we're going to do is a 1, 2, 3 format. First thing we're going to do is
one thing that we can teach you, the listener.
Thank you. I had to update my Google Doc here. Okay, so one thing that we can teach the listener. That's the first thing that we're going to start with. So it's kind of one thing that we've learned, one thing that could benefit you. Second thing that we're going to do is two perspectives. So we'll each kind of take a side on something, two perspectives on...
something related to education, of course. Something in our classroom, something that is coming into our classrooms.
Something that we see coming from the future, you know, something we've dealt with in the past, just two perspectives. And the third thing is what we're calling a 3-minute gut check. This is going to be 3 minutes each. So I will ask Matt a question that he has not seen previous to...
spontaneous, impromptu.
Exactly, ad-libbing it. So that'll be 3-minute gut check. So I'll ask Matt a question. He'll have 3 minutes to... kind of give us his answer, give us his take on it, and then the same thing back at me. It'll give you some final thoughts and kind of wrap up, call the podcast.
You bet, you bet. Let's start out with the number one then. Russ, tell us one thing we can learn today. I understand you're going to talk to us about URL shorteners.
Yes, okay, so we were talking about this before the podcast, kind of trying to get things ready. What happened was we... claimed with studentsinmind.blogspot.com, but we kind of figured with studentsinmind.com.org, whatever, would be better. It'd be, you know, it's just one of those things that looks a little bit nicer. But with students in mind, a little bit long.
Very long.
Yeah, it doesn't really roll off the tongue. So we thought about WSIM, with studentsinmind.org. Well, of course, those are all taken. Those acronyms go fast. So Matt had the idea
that we need to somehow create a short URL that's going to direct our listeners, and ourselves for that matter, to our repository of resources, podcasts and links and all those types of things. But we need to be short. We can't say withstudentsinmind.blogspot.com every time, so we needed somehow, some way to shorten that process so our listeners and so we can figure out where all of our resources are. We don't necessarily have that ready to go for our podcast right now. What are some resources that our listeners could use if they want to shorten their own URLs?
Okay, so I was going to say, if you are familiar with, if you've been on Twitter much, really if you've been much around the web lately, URL shorteners are getting to be pretty mainstream.
Yes.
There are a couple big ones out there that Matt and I use, and those are tr.im and then bit.ly, bit.ly. Now what's great about, basically a URL shortener, all it does is take a long URL and it gives you a really short one that redirects to that long one. So for example, it might be tr.im/M(k0,5t). Okay, so you would instead of having to memorize this really long URL, you just take that short one, and it's something that's easier and quicker. When I saw that they really started, it was from things like a Google map. If I wanted to send my wife Becky, your sister, a link to a map, instead of having that ridiculously long Google Maps link, you know, I could just send this trimmed down link. They're not always necessarily to memorize, but it's just the fact that it's not going to take up four lines on her iPhone. It's just going to be a lot shorter for her.
What about for your students? I imagine that once upon a time, you, me, our listeners have written out this really gigantic URL on the board. And, you know, there's that one letter that they mistype.
Yep.
How could a URL shortener help in that area?
Yep. It's the same kind of thing. It's, for one thing, it's quicker for me to write up on the board if that's what they need to do. I used this last year with kids because we only had a half hour in the computer lab, and I don't want them to spend 20 minutes of that half hour typing out this URL and troubleshooting just typing it in. So we used them that way. Now, what these two URL shorteners that I pointed out earlier bring to the table is what they call custom URLs.
Okay.
And so instead of getting this random string of lowercase and capital letters, you can actually determine what you want the URL to be.
Okay.
So I'll give you an example of how I've used it in my classroom.
Sure.
My students publish their writing on our classroom blog.
Okay.
And so instead of sending out links to www.mrgarin.com/search/label/student-writing. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yes.
What we've got is tr.im/MrGKids.
Oh.
So that's easy for people to remember, and it's also, this was great for the kids because they can remember it. They've got it memorized, so I sent them out on a mission. When you go to Thanksgiving, I told them before Thanksgiving, when you go to Thanksgiving and you're seeing all your family, that's like a business card for you. Tell your friends, tell your family, tr.im/MrGKids.
It's catchy. It really is.
It is, and it works out because it's just easier to remember, and, you know, for the kids, that's huge. You know, they don't necessarily want to spend a lot of time, you know, going to the blog, clicking on this link, trying to figure out where I put the link. If they can have something that they can memorize, then it works out really well for them.
You bet.
Now, it's pretty easy to get these done. All you have to do on trim, it's on the main page, tr.im.
Okay.
You put in your URL, and it's right there. It says custom URL. You just put whatever you want.
Shrink it down for you.
Yep. You put whatever you want in the custom box. That's what will end up after the slash, after the tr.im/.
Okay.
On Bitly, it's a little bit different. I actually didn't realize until a couple days ago that Bitly actually has custom URLs.
Oh, wow.
Because you have to shorten it first. So once you shorten the URL, then you'll have a chance to put the custom URL in. And it's great. Both of those, the other thing my kids love about them is both of those places give you stats. So you can see how many people have clicked on the link.
You can find out how popular you are.
Exactly. And, you know, that's something that motivates some people.
It
so
does.
For the kids, we'll pull that up every once in a while and they can see, you know, we've had 1,000, 1,500 people click on that tr.im/MrGKids. And that's something that really motivates them.
That's great. So that's wrapping up the first part of our podcast here. One thing that we can teach you, the listeners, one thing that we've learned recently. Let's move on to the second one. The second part of our podcast here is two perspectives. And I'm going to start out, Russ, by asking you a few questions here.
Okay.
Kind of our perspective here is related to our years of experience. What's it like to be a second-year teacher? What's it like to be a sixth-year teacher? And how is that different? And how is it the same, obviously? So, Russ, kind of the first question that I'll ask you is, you're an ambitious second-year teacher. This is your first year in the classroom, having the same students every block every day. You've got a year under your belt of teaching talented and gifted students. So as kind of this ambitious first-year classroom teacher, how much time do you spend kind of inward thinking, you know, thinking about what are some things I need to change versus thinking about what are things that I can help my building change to help students? And then there's also like this other perspective, like, how much time do you spend thinking about how can I help the entire educational system change? How do you balance that?
That's a great question. We were talking about this, you and I, the other night on Instant Messenger.
Yes.
And the more I've been thinking about that conversation, the more I kind of like kind of that spur of the moment analogy that I made up. And obviously not the first person to think of this, but it's a juggling act.
Sure.
You know, and what we're talking about is that it's not necessarily the number of objects that you're juggling, but what I'm thinking about is the size. It's the size of the object.
Okay.
One thing that I was considering is that I don't feel like I ever actually put down any of the objects that I'm juggling in. When I think of me as a juggler, I'm thinking of my family.
Sure.
You know, my life outside of education.
You have a life outside of education?
Which I'm trying to think of what that would be at this point. But, you know, it's new house, new job. I mean, those things that the new job could be anything. It doesn't necessarily have to be teaching. But, you know, just those life things. And so I don't think I ever actually put down the objects that I'm juggling. It's more that maybe I can shrink them a little bit, so or make
bowling
them
bigger. Ball size to ping pong ball size.
Exactly. And so in regard to the actual internal versus kind of external, the classroom versus building, I guess, you know, it's tough because one of the things, transparently speaking here, that I struggle with is organization. And so
sure.
I don't have the kind of classroom that I can just forget about that will necessarily run itself.
Sure.
You know, so I can't let it go to focus on, you know, building-wide initiatives, building-wide change kind of things. And so, you know, I'm still every day working on lesson planning and, you know, sure. getting better at seeing farther into the future, that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I spend a lot of time with that. And what's great is I'm in a great environment in my building.
Very supportive.
Yes.
Administrators, yes. Teachers, instructional coach.
Yes, amazing. And it's that kind of stuff. And what's great is, I'm saying great a lot here, but it's truly how I feel. There is a ton of give and take. Is that
okay.
The one thing that I really have noticed about our building and our district, kind of our administration, the way our school is run, is that we will recognize the things that people bring to the table. You know, and so
that's great.
People have recognized that this is the kind of thing I do. I mean, doing this podcast right now, talking about as nerdy as URL shorteners are, you know, that kind of thing, you know, that is where I excel. And so I have been kind of, I've had that kind of stuff pulled out of me. You know, I've been asked already to be in leadership positions in technology, that kind of thing. But I'm still able to seek out other people who have expertise in those things, like lesson planning, seeing into the future, you know, projecting your lessons over 3 weeks, you know, seeing how they fit together, that kind of
the specialization model, if you will. You know, there's people in your building that specialize in different areas, and together collectively you can help create a great product.
Definitely.
That being the students.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, and it works really well.
Okay. Well, I got just one more question to ask you, and it's kind of a piggyback question.
Okay.
And, you know, as a second-year teacher, again, this classroom teacher, you're... I think I used the word ambitious previously. You're interested in trying out new things. With that in mind, though, what do you spend the most time doing that you didn't expect doing? And, you know, what do you wish that you knew? And also, what do you know a whole lot more about that surprises you? Kind of going back to that specialization model you talked about.
Right. I have to say, I love how, since I didn't prepare at all for this, that I'm basically getting two of these gut checks.
Oh, don't worry. There's one more to come. We got a whole another session.
Well, let's see. So what did I not expect? I did not expect there to be so much paperwork, I guess. And that's kind of my own fault. You know, you only have to do what you have them do, kind of thing. And so I am working toward, as a class, and what's huge is getting student buy-in on this kind of thing. And so we've kind of made it an initiative in our classroom to go as paperless as possible. So, for example, in my language arts classroom, I don't accept final drafts on paper anymore.
Oh, okay.
And I say, and that's strong language, I don't accept final drafts on paper, but the kids kind of get a kick out of that. You know, you give them that hard rule, mm-hmm. and they have to work on following it, mm-hmm. kind of thing. And so, you know, I'm doing, I guess, what I can to now attack those things that I didn't see coming. What did I not expect? Well, here's something I didn't expect. I'm in a big building for what I thought, or for what I'm used to. I grew up in a small town.
Sure.
Last year I taught in a small building. This year I still see people almost every day that I'm not sure either their name, their full name, I'm not sure what exactly they teach or what exactly they do. It's just I'm not used to, or I didn't expect the kind of expansiveness.
Well, there's about as many students in one grade at Waukee as there were the entire high school.
Oh, the whole
that you grew up in? Is that right?
Oh yeah.
Close to it?
Oh yeah, more.
More. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, more. And then like last year, the school that I taught in, there's more in my sixth grade this year students than there were K-12 in the building last year. So it's just those, you know, those things that, yeah, just like your question asked that I didn't expect.
Sure.
So, okay, my turn here. And this is a question that I love. And I wrote it, I didn't write it, whatever. I'm big on this. You are a classroom teacher.
Yes.
Okay, so how do you balance that role of being a classroom teacher while also attempting to lead or getting into that leadership, those leadership roles? What opportunities do you have? How have those opportunities been given to you, or have you had to create them?
It's a great question. There's a lot of emotion behind that question, but at the same time, it's a very difficult question to answer. It's really weird. I've only been at one school. I mean, this is my sixth year at Solon High School. And I can remember being that first, second-year teacher that was asking my mentor teacher questions like, how do I fill out a request for a day off? And I can remember going to the mentor-mentee meetings and just soaking it all in. And then magically one day, I had the guts to speak up at a staff meeting. And I think everyone was kind of looking around like, who's that guy? He's supposed to be the second-year teacher, not knowing what's going on. And I really don't know there's not really a title that goes along with being a teacher leader. I don't know really when that role changed. But I think, and you'll find this out, Russ, maybe you're in a bigger school than I am, but maybe you've already found it out too, is that there are certain people that you go to ask questions. And there are certain people that I used to go to ask questions, and for whatever reason, now there are people asking me questions, mm-hmm. which means that something has changed in there. And I think one of the things that has helped me kind of make that transition is reading. Russ, we talk about this all the time. We are reading all the time, reading blogs, reading books, reading articles, all those. Just being informed, by definition, it seems like, takes you to that next level. Iowa Core Curriculum is a perfect example. While many of us in our building are trying to figure out how to implement it, some of us are still trying to figure out what it even is. Mm-hmm. And if you know what it is, you all of a sudden become this source of knowledge, which, right or wrong, turns into being a leader at an informal or formal level. Another thing, and again, I don't really know how to explain this, is that when you begin to challenge others' views on education, Russ, we talk about homework and grading and all those things. It's one thing to challenge someone else, but it's even more useful or more sought out when you can challenge someone's views based on how you personally have done it differently and found success. I can think about when I came back from the Iowa Council of Teachers and Mathematics Conference last year, and I was really psyched up to do standards-based grading. And I was still kind of leery, is this really going to work? Was it just somebody's crazy idea? So I just decided to give it a try. And then I started sharing it with other teachers. All these theories that I've been talking about for a long time, I finally put into practice, and there was like a light bulb that went in their mind saying, you know what, this isn't just a theory anymore. This is something that can happen. Does it take time? Oh my gosh, yes. I had a student teacher right now, and he taught on his own, kind of that solo teaching for probably 4 or 5 weeks. During that time, I had meetings and presentations and all kinds of things. If I didn't have a student teacher at that time, I don't know what I would have done. When we went to the iTech conference, I was gone for 2 days out of the classroom. There's no way I could have prepared and come back and fixed up all the crazy things that happen when you're gone without having that student teacher there. There's only a finite amount of time in the day, and I don't really know how it happens. But I think it kind of goes back to what you're saying, too. It's the juggling. And sometimes a principal or someone in a formal leadership role is going to toss you the big ball, and they're going to give you the opportunity to step in. I'm really fortunate to have a principal who not only talks about shared responsibility, but also lives it out. He has given me opportunities to lead our building leadership team meetings. He says, Matt, you can set the agenda. Here's all the resources. If you need something, come talk to me. And so being, first of all, having the respect of your staff, and then someone in formal leadership sees, oh, he's got potential, jumping in there, and then they finally give you the big ball to juggle. And it's just picking it up and hopefully having the time to do that.
One thing I heard you say was this idea of learning by doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we've talked about before. It happens to be the name of one of the books that we happen to be reading as a staff right now by the Dufours.
Sure.
It's one of the Dufour models for PLCs. And I really buy in. And it sounds like you're the same way, that, you know, it's one thing to lead by talking,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to learn by reading,
mm-hmm.
you know, you learn about what others do, but it's another thing to experience it yourself. And I think what you're saying is that those other teachers can see that you've learned it
yes.
by doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you're not just spouting off about something you've read.
Sure. And I think the other thing too is that there are times, not only informal opportunities, but there are formal opportunities. Like I talked about the building leadership team. We have a technology showcase day every year where teachers can voluntarily lead little half-hour sessions. So when the opportunities do arise, do you take advantage of them? Do you step out on a limb and say, you know what, I'm going to try that out? And I think that's an important part of enhancing your own leadership capacity, is seizing opportunities, even when it's going to involve staying after school an extra couple hours, which I know neither of us are afraid to do. Doing that and seizing the opportunities, to me, is equally as important as leading by doing. You can lead by doing for a long period of time, but you do also have to step out on that limb and try something else out new that's a little out of your comfort zone. And maybe that's cliche to say, but I've done it, and it seems to be working.
Okay, one last quick question then. Sure. On that topic. Is everyone striving to be a teacher leader? Are all teachers, do you think that's the goal of every teacher?
I really don't think so. I'd like to think so, and I'd like to be in a building someday where that's happening. But we know there are the teachers that just come 8 to 4, and that's what they're there for. I've had teachers tell me, hey, be careful what you volunteer for. Don't get so involved that you get burned out, right? We've talked about that.
Of course, yes.
You know, and they say, you got to learn when to say no. I agree with that. But to me, those that are never volunteering are the ones that, dare I say this, are there just to collect a paycheck.
Well, and it goes back to what you're saying, balance.
Balance.
You know, I think it kind of goes back to, and that seems to be the theme of what we've been talking about today, okay. is, you know, that goes back to that balance. And, you know, I guess here's the other question. Does every teacher need to be striving to be a leader? I mean, what does a school look like that's all leaders?
Too many chiefs, not enough Indians.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So does that...
I think it goes back to the specialization model. We need to have teachers that are paving the way, and here's some new digital tools that maybe you're not familiar with that could help you out based on your teaching strategies. We need to have the teachers that are saying, here's some new things I learned at this assessment-related conference. Here's some new things I learned related to different reading strategies to bring back to your language arts PLC or whatever it may be. So we need to have teachers leading in different ways. If everyone's striving to be the technology leader, that can cause problems. On the same token, if no one's striving to be that technology leader, that can be problems, can create lots of problems. So I think it's something that we can rehash again in a future podcast. I think it's something that's not going to be going away, and it's worth talking about some more.
Sounds good.
All right,
I've got the timer set up for 3-minute gut checks.
Oh, all right.
Well, how are we doing this? You going first?
I'll go first. All right, here we go. 3-minute gut check. I listed out all of the things. Okay, we've talked about balance today. This is related to it. I'm going to make you, I'm going to force you to take a stand here. Okay?
Okay.
This is what gut checks are all about. Okay?
Okay.
I listed out all the things that take up my time on a daily basis. Okay. Checking papers, long-term planning, my classroom blog, grade book, updating grades, lesson planning, creating assessments, keys for those assessments, my math teacher, maybe not related there, creating study guides or handouts, keys for those, writing answers on the board, giving students the answers, grading homework and tests, creating a portfolio, updating the website. Those are all things that are involved with being a teacher, not to mention getting a new Kleenex box when you're out of Kleenexes, all the things that you do to be a teacher. What gives? What's one thing that we can eliminate? What's the one thing that we can just say, no more? And there's the written list, because that was unfair to rattle them all off like that.
All right.
3 minutes.
So what am I getting rid of?
Yeah, what's
out
the
of
one
this
thing
list?
That gives? There has to be something that gives.
I am looking at this. I'm looking at checking papers. As a language arts teacher, that'd probably be a pretty easy one to get rid of. Long-term planning. Updating the classroom blog. lesson plans, writing the answers, grading homework and tests, portfolios. I mean, here's, okay, so I can tell you what, here's what I would do. I'll tell you what I have been giving up here as a second year teacher.
This is a gut check, go for it.
And probably what I should be or would. At this point, I've been giving up me time. You know, sure. I've been giving up my portfolio, my professional advancement, you know, that kind of stuff. I've been, I've spent less time reading my own, not my own writing, but reading for my own learning.
Sure.
Than I am, you know, reading student writing, reading, you know, books for student book clubs, that kind of stuff. So as it stands, I'm, what's been giving is, you know, me, is my learning. Sure. What I should probably be giving up,
you know, is there something you can look at this list? It's a list of good things, right?
It is. That's what's so hard about it. I mean, every single one of them, I'm going through, and what I'm doing is thinking about what would happen if I gave it up.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, since writing answers is a math-related one, but I'm applying that to, you know, my own, what sure. we do in my class. It'd be, you know, weekly they do certain things in their journals. So it'd be,
sure.
it'd be taking that away from them. So taking away the choice, I can't imagine doing that. I think capital E education, it's probably something like, you know, grading homework and tests. It's probably getting away from that model. I mean, the model that I'm trying to strive for in my classroom is kind of a portfolio, a writing portfolio, but public model that the kids can claim and know that they have in the future. You know, so it's getting away from that, you know, getting away from this is the test, this is the only way that you have to show me what you know, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of model. And I think that's the kind of thing that I'd get rid of. It's, I had a kind of a conversation on Twitter this morning already. You know, we just had a thought this morning about grades and, you know, who are they there for, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my opinion, they're there for parents. I mean, students understand, well, I don't know if anybody fully understands grades, but students get that they're letters and that this kind of ranks me or something, but I think that students, if we got rid of grades, it'd be easier for them. They still have their writing. They still know, you know,
mm-hmm.
their worth, so yeah. to speak, from that. But parents depend on that kind of stuff.
And that's a wrap for your 3-minute gut check.
All wow, right, 3 minutes wow. are up.
3 minutes are up. That goes quick.
It does. All right, so my 3 minutes for you.
Okay.
Thinking about what I know of Matt Townsley as a teacher.
Okay,
when I think of Matt Townsley, what I think of are things like grading, things like homework, and this is foreign stuff to me because it's a math classroom. And I'm
sure.
When I grew up, this is what I'll say. You are attempting to do away with or at least completely change the way we think about the things that I grew up with. You know, when I grew up in the math classroom, it was the assignment was written on the board. This is what you do.
Sure,
this is your homework. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Okay.
And so when I think of, you know, I don't feel like I would recognize your classroom. So, question is, if I were a math teacher, why shouldn't I? Well, let's say if I were any teacher, okay? Why shouldn't I grade homework? More importantly, how do I motivate without homework?
Okay. 3 minutes. Start the clock there. That's a great question. Here's a full disclosure statement. I don't think that everything I say is fully transferable to every single math classroom. I teach geometry, which is a class that is everyone takes, basically. And I also teach statistics, which is an elective. I have taught in the past a personal business math class, which is not necessarily a class that every student takes. Different clientele, if you will. If I had a class with that different clientele, I think I would have to adjust some of my strategies. Okay. Now, with that in mind, feel free to throw in an interim gut check. In my particular classroom, students are still generated by, or are still motivated by grades, whether we like it or not. Grades are here to stay, whether we like it or not. Grades and learning are the two things that we can use as leverage to help students do what they should be doing based on what the state or the district, wherever it is, tells us we have to do, and that is teach students X, Y, and Z about geometry, X, Y, and Z about statistics. So for some students, leveraging the grade and leveraging the learning can be the same thing. For some students, leveraging the grade and leveraging the learning can be a different thing. Let me give you an example of something I've tried out recently in our classroom. That is, I've given students so much busy work related to this building goal on computation. The busy work is absolutely busy. It's ridiculous. Instead, I've preempted them with a quiz and said, if you know this stuff, you don't have to do the busy work. If they do, if they meet a certain level of competency, they don't have to do the busy work. If they don't, that means that you still don't know it yet. So I'm dangling a little carrot in front of their little rabbit ears and rabbit eyes and rabbit mouth saying, here's why you need to do it. So showing them just exactly what they need to do and why they need to do it is the first thing you have to do in this whole system. Now, I kind of gather that you've got another question for me, so I'll pause right there. But there needs to be some sort of carrot in front of them that depends on the student. We need to make it very clear to them what it is.
Okay, perfect transition here. So if grades are here to stay,
okay,
what about those students that aren't motivated by grades? I've got a couple that don't care.
That's a great example of where no one's figured it out. I wish I had the answer to that. It's little things like having the conversations. Do you know what you want to do the rest of your life? Do you want to go to college? If so, do you realize that you need to know X, Y, and Z so that you can know X, Y, and Z so you can even get into college? It's making it very real. I teach 60 students a day because we're in a block schedule, so I can have those conversations. If I had 120 students a day, that may be a little bit different. And I may even have more of them if I taught at a different school where I'd have to have those conversations with them. There's some carrot in front of every student, and we have to figure out what in the world that carrot is. Grades, homework, whatever it may be.
All right, perfect
timing.
3 minutes. Good, all right. Jeez.
My gut feels a little bit, my heart's beating right now. Yeah. I'm kind of throbbing.
Hey, that's the idea. Jeez. All right, well, what do we have here at the end?
Some final thoughts.
I had a good time.
Oh, great.
This is something that we've been wanting to do for a long time. So for one thing, it feels good to have just done it.
Yes.
It feels good to be able to check it off the old life checklist. Yes. I'm hoping to improve for next time. I'm thinking that we got nowhere to go but up.
Sure. Hey, sure. If you're listening, share your feedback.
We'd love it. That's the point. And the main thing is I'm looking forward to any type of conversation that comes out of this. You know, that's the idea is, I think I can say this for both of us. We're here to learn, and that's what, you know, that's why it's Saturday morning. That's why we're doing that. You know, that's why it's Tuesday nights at Ed Chat. That's why it's Friday nights at 10 o'clock. I mean, that's why we do this kind of stuff as well. So
I think one of the things I learned from you today, Russ, is the need for balance. And if there's something in this podcast that we're just going over the top with that we haven't found our balance, let's hear about it, you know? Maybe we talk about ourselves too much and we're just a bunch of hypocrites by saying it's about with the students in mind and we're not talking about the students enough. Let us know.
Good point. Here's the thing I'm going to take away. I loved when you said that there are times where administrators, whoever it is going to toss that ball to you to start juggling. I think the big takeaway is to be ready for that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think the failure is in dropping that ball. I think the failure is in not seeing it at all and not even reaching out to grab it.
That's a great point to end with you.
Okay.
We're going to post this podcast on our blog, which right now has a very long URL, ironically, which is, what is that, Russ?
That's going to be withstudentsinmind.blogspot.com.
Okay.
All right, we'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in.
With
students in mind. All right.